Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Hi, good afternoon. Lovely afternoon spot I have here, and welcome to Kosher Cravings on 101.9 Hi FM, where we don't just talk about food, we love it, we taste it, and quite frankly, we obsess over it. Okay, so today I have a great lineup. Someone who has taken that obsession with food and turned it into the most magnificent book for Pesach is Batya Kahan, who we'll be chatting to later. She's a new author of the most incredible, and I mean this, it is an amazing book, and it's entitled Pesach Secrets. And I know we haven't dealt with Purim yet, but, well, I hope we haven't until this point of the show, but I need to talk about this book early so that people can go out, people can order it and get it here in time. I'm sure we'll be able to get it from Kollel bookshops as well. And just the quality of the recipes. I mean, they can be used all around. The photography, I got so hungry just flipping each book, turning each page over. And it's not just a book of recipes. It's stories. It's your ultimate Pesach companion and beyond. I mean, it has everything you need to know for Pesach, from the different family minchagim traditions, the who's, the why's, the what's of the Seder plate, how to check vegetables and get organized for Pesach. And as I said before, later, Batya literally walks you through Pesach. She takes your hand and she literally takes you through to a beautiful Seder where you can chill, you can relax, and everything's done. So, before we get onto Batya, because we have a little bit of a time difference. So, as I was saying, before we get onto Batya, let me tell you what's been aggravating, annoying me, and driving me insane this week. Oh, those damn flies. Okay, I've tried everything. I've even moved my dustbins to Benoni. I don't know what to do anymore. I've put up basil plants. I mean, I've taken every tip from every single person that has ever spoken to me. I've put mint up, I've put basil, lavender, marigold, somebody said. And I put them all around my windows, next to the kitchen door. I sprayed water and lavender. I sprayed eucalyptus. I sprayed peppermint and lemongrass and cloves, yes, cloves in a bowl of dried cloves. Apparently that's meant to do it. Actually, you know what's also very nice with cloves? Is to suck one, especially those people who smoke cigarettes. Suck a clove when you smoke. citronella candles. You name it, I've done it. But you know what has been working for me? A powerful fan. I mean, I put mine on so powerfully that my cheeks quiver. They flutter every time it swivels near me. But it does help. Okay, it's irritating when the paper, whatever you put down on your tray to cook, flutters in the air. I know that we have spoken about safety precautions in the home and food safety. Like the experts say that they talk about a danger zone. And the danger zone with regards to temperatures and things like that are... No, I've got to start again. I'm sorry. We've got to put this back. Sorry, I'm looking for a word.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Okay, now that I have spoken about flies and horrible creatures, let's talk a little bit about food safety. So experts talk about the danger zone, temperatures between 5 degrees and 60 degrees, where bacteria multiply rapidly. So in a South African summer, which we are going through right now, and it's really been hot, and I've actually been watching my butter just melting to nothing. We can't leave perishable foods out really for more than 2 hours. And I even say 1 hour because it's so damn hot. These include everything from dairy to eggs to cooked rice, cut fruit. Also, never, ever leave anything out uncovered. You know, so often I've been to a simcha or I've been out for lunch and you see those little white things like on top of the meat, on top of a little meatball, or on top of a fish. I mean, flies, those horrible blue bottle flies, love fish. They love meat. They love mince. Okay, and they lay those revolting eggs, which some people don't even see. So be aware of that, people, because those little eggs turn into worms. I'm sorry if you're eating, but I need to talk about it. Okay, so as I say, summer, we need to cover everything. We need to make sure that things are put into the fridge all the time. And I wouldn't use a hot summer's day to have a marathon cooking session, because you'll be cooking one thing and you'll start on something else and then you leave that food sitting out and the damn flies come. And just rather make like simple, quicker meals that spend minimal time at room temperature. So something like, make your salad, stick it in the fridge. Well, nothing wrong with cold soups and like no cooked dinners. So have cold meats and salads and everything that you can leave in the fridge until the last minute. And then when you take it out, make sure you cover it with a net. Okay, and as I said, summer heat does accelerate spoilage. You'll notice that your salads last a day. You'll notice that your chopped liver lasts a day. And winter lasts for 2 days. And remember to use your nose and use your eyes. They are excellent safety tools. If something smells a little not so aye, just be careful. Funnily enough, not with scotch fillet. Meat off the bone, you can leave, I leave my scotch fillet, but it's vacuum packed for about 3 weeks to help it really get soft and break down. So I'm not talking about steaks. But be careful with meat on the bone, because that bone can start decomposing. So rather use meat off the bone if you're going to braai. Okay, so a little bit of recipes can sometimes be a minefield of terms. Okay, the jargon they use, the foreign words. So I decided that I'm going to teach you a little bit about those French words or Italian words and help you to, you know, avoid all the confusion with recipes. So I'm starting with A and B this week. Next week we'll go on to C and D. Okay, so al dente was the first thing that I decided to talk about. Okay, so generally this cooking term is used when referring to the cooking of pasta and rice, but technically it actually includes vegetables and beans too. Not butter beans and things like that. So al dente is translated as to the tooth, meaning something cooked but left with a bite of firmness. Okay, I'm not too fond of a bite of firmness in my rice and in my pasta. I like it cooked, but not overcooked. I mean, we don't like it mushy. But I just don't like that little piece of the end. So what I do is I will boil it for a minute less. And then if I'm going to put a sauce on, I add the pasta to the sauce and let it cook for another minute. And that sort of gives me that al dente feel. Then we're going to go on to baste. Okay, so what does baste mean? It means to pour melted fat or the juices of the liquid over meat or other food while cooking to keep it moist. And then blanch means a quick method of cooking food, usually green vegetables, whereby the item is basically scalded in boiling water for a short period of time and then refreshed in ice cold water. So I'm sure you've often seen chefs where they put it into boiling water and then next to them they've got a bowl with ice. And this ensures that the veggies keep their beautiful bright green colour and a good firm texture, which is so hard on Shabbos. Okay, and then braising meat is obviously, it's an old French term and it's a method of cooking meat and it uses a combination of dry and moist heat. So dry being when the meat is seared at a high heat and moist when it's gently cooked in a little bit of liquid. And this cooking method actually is ideal for sinewy, tougher cuts of meat. So I see that I have to go to a break now. And I'll be back with some lovely recipes for you from Butter's Kitchen, from her Pesach book.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Kosher Cravings. And as mentioned before, we have a wonderful treat lined up for you all. We have Batya Kahan, who is the author of Pesach Secrets from Batya's Kitchen. Now, for the South Africans, welcome to the show, Batya.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you? Okay, before we start talking ingredients and oven temperatures and all that, tell me a little bit about Batya Kahan. Tell us about Batya's Kitchen. We don't know... Not many of us know about Butcher's Kitchen in America, so fill us in. And how it all started for you?
About 14 years ago, I thought to start up a business. The first thing that came to mind was cooking for families, dinners, or, you know, when someone has a baby, maybe to help out there and start like that in my house. And we started small, and my first Pesach, I had 18 customers. Those were from my inner circle of people that knew me and trusted me, and we went from there. And now, 18 years later, actually it was 18 years ago, but 14 years I was in my house. Yes. And four years ago, I left to a commercial kitchen. And that's where I cook out of now.
Okay. So that is now Butcher's Kitchen, correct? And you supply.
Yes.
You supply.
So basically, basically we cook. I cook for families.
Yes.
For mainly yontifs and holidays and get togethers and gatherings and simchas. And my biggest season is Pesach.
Right.
And we went from 18 customers to close to 2,000.
Wow.
So it's a huge, and we ship all over the United States. So it's a national situation. So, and people take it with them when they go to Israel, or people have taken it to London and Switzerland and wherever they may have landed, they take it with them. But it's 18 years.
I'm just thinking aloud here that people who live in South Africa who have children overseas, they could order online from you. Where would we be able to contact you? How would they contact
you? So, yes, I do. I have many people from overseas that order online. If they want to gift somebody or if they want to send it to their children, they go online to batyaskitchen.com. Very simple. And it's like a checkout, and you just click, 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 and it just gets shipped for you. Home style, good food, like food that you would make in your own home. Delicious, yummy, cozy food.
Well, if your book is anything to go by, then people are going to have the most magnificent, delicious looking home style food ever. So, I know, like, food connects you to generations in our community. And what role does that play for you in cooking? I mean, is there anybody who influenced you in passing on this wonderful cooking passion?
Yes, so many people have influenced me along the years.
Yes.
In the book, I don't know if you've seen the book, but if
Yes,
you
I've.
read the book, I know you've seen the book,
Yeah.
but I think I listed every single person that had influenced me over the years.
I saw that.
And
Your thank yous went out to them.
Oh, really? Yes.
Yeah.
And every single person that has given me a recipe that I've been using, I've thanked them in the book.
Yes.
And so they're going to be so shocked that I remembered that they gave me a recipe when I was 16 years old. We used to love hosting and cooking for our friends, sheva brachos, and cooking
Yes.
for our friends' showers. And we picked up so many recipes along the way. And I used to have Shabbos meals by me. And that's why people thought that I would be good at it, because I loved it so much. And I love cooking for people. I love cooking, making people happy with food. Thank God, Hashem has blessed me with this business, and I'm able to help so many people with food.
Yes.
We do a lot of chesed with that. So I'm so grateful that I'm able to give with food, which makes people so happy because they feel so supported and comforted. And not just for simchas and for tragedies also. We've been there for people, and we have a actually we have a partnership with a chesed organization in my community, where people go online and they're able to add money to their order to give to others. So that makes me very, very happy.
Beautiful.
And yes, we get lots and lots and lots of donations. I can't, it's like mind-blowing how giving people are. So we partner up with them, and we are able to give to others,
Yes.
whether they're going through a hard time or struggling. So it's very, very nice, a nice feeling.
Absolutely. I was actually looking. I looked at this book and I was blown away. I mean, it what's it about 368 pages of the most magnificent food that you would cook all round, never mind just on Pesach. And I mean, you've got 14 different dips or salatim for Pesach. I mean, your creativity is just next level. I just can't wait to create some of them. And I mean, every recipe that you've created. I mean, I was reading the making gefilte fish great again. Okay, so we all
Yes.
know that every recipe has its own. I mean, has its own legacy. So we could say,
Yes, yes, yes.
shaped. And I mean, everybody has this one has a recipe, and oh, you need to add rather use soda water than regular water, and I mean, everybody has their little tip. And I saw that you must have tried gefilte fish, what, 100 times?
So actually, I tried it like 8 times
Yeah.
because I wanted to get it right. And I felt that Pesach is much more than the recipes. It's more, going back to our roots, knowing where we came from. There's a lot of customs, minhag awareness in the book. Since I have a certain minhag, maybe someone else has a different one.
Yeah.
When I interviewed women on how they make gefilte fish, I realized that the world is so much bigger, and everyone has their way, and everyone thinks their way is the best.
Yeah.
And I tried every way, because for us now in New York, at least, it's easy to get gefilte fish loaves that you just cook in the water,
Right.
and our children will do that. But the way they used to do it, and the way many, many Hasidic women do it, there are some women that don't eat fish unless they kill the fish in front of them.
Yeah.
Like it's yes, because they and I learned so much by interviewing people, on how they make Pesach. So it was really really, really eye-opening. And I felt like getting to the bottom of how to make a filet fish from scratch is what Pesach is all about, going back to the basics. And until I got it right, actually, I was like, whoa, everybody's tips were so different. And I was like, I tried everyone's tips and I said, no, I need it. I'm waiting to get that perfect gefilte fish. And then and my husband, who loves gefilte fish, was my taste tester, and many people, and my son-in-law, they were the taste testers, and my secretary loves gefilte fish. So everyone who loves gefilte fish were my taste testers. And actually, at the end, the fish store, my local fish store, he's a Hasidish family-owned business. They have their grandmother's recipe that they've been making for years, and I love their gefilte fish. And he was the one who really taught me the right method. And it actually, I combined everyone's tips with his method, and everything clicked. Once you'll see, I wrote it. I wrote it. I wrote it. It was so interesting.
I'm going to share it with everybody after this, after chatting to you. I'm going to share that recipe. And then, I mean, to think when you think that there are so many things that you can do with fish on Pesach. I mean, I was just flipping through, and I thought it just looked so beautiful. That all the different things that you do with the crumbed fish and this and that, and I mean, we just sort of. Well, my family have fried fish balls, fried gefilte fish balls, and fried fish fingers, and that's it. And that's what they have. But you have incorporated, I think, about 10 different fish dishes. But I will share that with people later. And then, of course, we go on to your section of blintzes. I mean, I don't. That is. Blintzes by me are just either cheese blintzes, or on Pesach I make up the potato flour blintzes, and I put a bit of mincemeat in, and we have it in soup. But you have got a recipe for, I mean, I'm just thinking, you've got the pulled brisket, you've got chopped liver in blintzes, you've got pastrami and onion. I mean, these are things that who would think of these things? Only you. So now there's one question that I want to ask you. I always want to make a cholent over Pesach. What do you use instead of the barley and the beans?
Okay, that's a great question. So my whole life I used just, onions, potatoes, meat, great, a lot of meat, right? And a lot of bones and a lot of meat and spices. I used to stick actually a whole potato kugel on top, just to give it that. But recently, in the last few years, there's a company in New York that makes, I don't know if you've heard of it in South Africa, but Began, right? Have you heard of Began products? Okay, so they've been making for the caterers something called toasted barley for Pesach, which is actually made out of potatoes. So I used to, so I used to order it as a caterer, and make it with the challah, and it is really, really awesome, really amazing. Like in the photo shoot, like we all ate the challah at the photo shoot at like at a regular day because it was so good looking. And I think recently they put it out on the market, in the retail market. So that's why I put it in the book. I wouldn't have put it in the book if you can't like really get it in the market. So, but really, if even if you don't have it, like it's still delicious,
What
still
is it?
delicious.
What is it made up of? Is it almost like a potato pudding kind of thing?
No, it's like little, it looks like barley. Looks like barley, but it's totally potato. So I instruct people, like, it could get really mushy if you cook it too long. So you have to know exactly when to put it in. Basically, at the last minute of cooking your challah, you put it in, and then it's like the perfect consistency. And it is really, really yummy. So I hope that you could find it in South Africa. But even if you can't, like the challah is still delicious, and you could stick so many different things in there, like a little potato kugel, a little pastrami, or a little, people make their challah pretty basic on Pesach, if you don't have that.
Now, you also mentioned Delmonico's steak. What drew me to this recipe is the coffee rub, which is something I love. Mm-hmm. I love rubbing coffee onto a roast. It just gives it that beautiful brown caramelized look. But the Delmonico's steak, which you talk about, I haven't seen it at any of the butchers here. I believe that it is a chuck steak, sort of cut closer to the ribeye, and goes.
Okay.
Am I correct in that? So if I had to
okay,
go to my...
Okay, so I'll explain. Yeah, okay. I'll explain. Delmonico.
Yes.
Delmonico is really it's a butcher's cut.
Right.
So every butcher might call Delmonico different things. So every store might call Delmonico different things. But really what Delmonico is, it means first cut, right? So Delmonico is really the most prime cut of whatever type of meat you're getting. So if you want a Delmonico rib steak, that means it was that first cut of the rib steak, or Delmonico flanken roast, Delmonico French roast. It means it's the least fatty and the most red, first cut type of meat in that area. So every butcher called it differently. So you might have it in South Africa as first cut, right? I don't know how they call it in your butcher.
I don't
there.
Know. I'm going to have to speak to some of the butchers and see what we can do there. And then they can actually call it Delmonico steak. Delmonico was a restaurant, wasn't it, originally?
Yeah, there's so many different, every store you go to will call Delmonico something else. So it's really considered first cut. And also in America, we, in my butchers, we have the imported and the exported meat. So anything, American beef is considered much more chashuv than imported beef from, let's say, Uruguay or Argentina or something like that. So I don't know where you get your meat in South Africa or how it works in South Africa.
It's shifted here. We should. We have it. Get it, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. I guess you know your cuts.
Okay, but that one I have to work on. Okay, now, is there a dish in this book that really reminds you of your childhood that you had to include?
Sure, everything.
No,
not everything, because I picked up different... recipes along the way. I grew up in a very simple, a simple palate type of home. It was my parents were Israeli. So of course, schnitzel, and mashed potatoes and Israeli salad was like, for sure.
Yes.
My mother didn't really cook meats or kugels. She didn't make kugels or meats. It was chicken soup, chicken and potatoes. Very, very simple types of food is what I grew up with. And all the other foods you have in the cookbook is recipes that have been given to me or that I've tried and that I loved along the way or, learned from people.
You've definitely presented them beautifully. So that the people who get them to you can be very proud.
Okay. Yes, they're going to be happy.
I have to put you on the spot. Okay, let me pick your brain. What's for Shabbos this week? What are you making? What are you serving?
That's a good question. That's a great question. Happens to be that my family also, they don't like fancy food. We are creatures of habit. We love... my husband loves his gefilte fish. They love their chicken soup. They love, their roast or they love capons. My family loves capons.
Okay, what are capons? We don't get capons here. If you can tell our listeners what capons are.
Okay, so capons can mean different things to different people.
Right.
But here in the stores here, capons are boneless. Chicken bottoms or boneless chicken breast.
Yes.
With the skin on. So it could be you have it, but you don't know what we call it. So it's boneless chicken that we stuff it with different things, right? So
right.
I show it in the book. You can either use a white capon. White capon would mean the chicken breast, and dark capon would mean, you know, the boneless dark meat of the chicken. And you can either grill it, you can stuff it, you can bread it. There's so many things you can do with it. And really, honestly, the dark chicken is what freezes the best. So it is a very popular item, you know, at Batya's Kitchen, especially. And we have so many different varieties of fillings, you know, that I offer.
Yes. And, so is it... would you say that it is a more tender kind of chicken? Because when
the dark meat is tender. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so it's very interesting because I was reading on the internet what a capon is, and it's something to do with a castrated chicken, male chicken.
I'm talking about capon in the kosher world.
Okay.
The kosher world and the kosher butchers here in New York, that's what they call the capon, you know?
Good.
Then we have a lot of people confuse it with maybe, you know, the Cornish hen, which is those small chickens. So we differentiate the Cornish hen and the capons differently. So that's also in my book, The Cornish Hen.
Yes,
so,
and for dessert, are you going to keep it simple, or are you making something fancy? Before you carry on, the recipes for Pesach are insane. They're beautiful. But there's one thing in South Africa, we cannot get Pesedeka Parav Krema. We don't get it. We can't make ice cream. And every year, the same question comes onto my desk. Are we going to get Oliwep or Riches or whatever it is this year? And the answer is always no.
That's such a shame.
Yeah, so we've really had to try and work out a different recipe for our
I should have sent you whip tapping instead of the book.
Absolutely.
But how do you, which companies, why can't they send that to you?
But there is somebody that imports stuff from America, but apparently this year they're not bringing it in because I don't know what reason it is. But we've tried to get around that. In fact, I've just done an article where everything is about desserts and how we can get around it. I've done a burnt almond ice cream that doesn't actually need the dairy. And we'll eat sorbets. And there's lots for us to eat. For 8 days, we can manage.
But I have a lot of different options. We have a lot of different options. But you're right that whipped topping is my ice creams. It's my mousse.
Yes.
It's my lemon mousse.
Exactly.
It's my chocolate mousse. It's you know, it's on the strawberry shortcakes. But there are so many different other varieties of stuff that is in there. Obviously, anything chocolatey and the sponge cakes and the marble cake and the cinnamon cake and the you know, the cinnamon crumb cake. Do you get the lady fingers?
We
the Pesach lady fingers?
No.
It's a battle. Oh my goodness.
It's a battle to even get kosher boudoir biscuits. We call them boudoir biscuits. Kosher biscuits.
Uh-huh.
It's a nightmare. Anyway, but we get them in from Schneider's. Thank God they're importers, and we do get those, but not the Pesach ones. So
we can't
make a tiramisu even if we had the cream.
You know, you should speak to the stores that they should import. Also from Israel, you can't import it from Israel rather than from America.
We can, but I've got to find somebody who's prepared to do it, and then it comes out and it's so expensive because the tax that they add. It's a business. So for 8 days, we try and work around it.
Okay. There's still 360. There's 368 pages. I'm sure there will be a variety of items.
Exactly.
There is a variety of items. You know, the Hasidim, They don't cook with whip topping.
Yes, yes.
They get very, very, very creative, and they make the most beautiful meals. And they don't
Oh,
miss
I
it. And
know.
it's and honestly, clean eating and going back to the basics is,
Yeah.
what Pesach is all about.
Well,
So
I agree with you, and I'm so happy that I actually managed to contact, or that you managed to contact Rochel. I mean, this is a funny story trying to get this book here, and off you went to Kiddus, and you said, "Who'll take this back for me?" Do you know that she actually brought this back in her carrying it in her hand luggage?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
Wow.
because it
She was
was.
so gracious. She was so gracious. Yes. And
No.
it's so funny that you said Rachel Goldman, and
Yes.
I was like, wow, that is the craziest thing, because how small is this world that she is related to my cousin.
Yeah.
She is my cousin's sister. And
Cousins.
the Kinnis,
Yes.
you walk into the Kinnis, and there's over 5,000 women, and you pinpointed to, a mutual relative. It's just the world is so small.
It
When
is.
you asked for the book, and you said, "Don't mail it. I'm not
Yes.
gonna get it. Don't mail
Yeah.
it." And Art Scroll, they said they could mail it, but they don't know when it will get there. And I said, "You know what? Let me take it to the Kinnis, and we'll see what we can do." So she
There
was
you
so
have it.
gracious to
She
take it with her.
is amazing. I'm so appreciative. And I know that everybody will be appreciative of this book because it's a wonderful present to give for Pesach. You know, I always say,
Yes,
take
yes.
people Pesachic food for Pesach, and here you can get them this beautiful book. You want to buy something for your daughter-in-law. You want to be on her good side. Give her this book. I mean, you walk us, but literally by hand, from buying the first box of matzah to laying our Seder table, and really, well, I'm grateful for you to you. And this book is stunning. Well done, Batya.
Thank you so much. Actually, going back to Rachel Goldman,
Yes.
she knows me since I'm a baby.
Oh, really?
And yes, and if you look in the book, in the beginning of the book, her
Yes.
sister, Devanya Alefsky, she is the Chabad shluch of Ohio.
Yes.
She is my father's first cousin, and we were very, very close. We had a very small family, and I used to spend Pesach in their house in Ohio. And that is where I learned how to make my first cake. And that is where I saw cases and cases of potatoes and onions and carrots. And I was my first experience of Chabad House, the way they host their meals in such revach. And all the kids had jobs, and I learned how to break an egg and, in
Yes.
their house. And how to, everybody was teamwork. You wash, you dry, you cut, you peel. And that's where really I have my foundation of who I am today, is from her sister's house.
Oh,
And I
wow.
owe them a lot of hakaras hatov. And that's why I was at the Kinnis, because they invite me every year to the Kinnis to be at their table. And it's such
Yes.
an honor. And I have that Lubavitch in me that I love to spread this
Yes.
book. I feel is like my own shlichus. In the book, there's so many things that I learned along the way being under Hashgacha for 18 years. So I was trained under
Yes.
Hashgacha, and there's a lot of kashrus awareness in there, and there's a
Yes.
lot of so many different things in this book that I feel like it's my shlichus, my own personal shlichus, that I'm just so honored, and I can't believe that it came out so gorgeous.
It did. It's magnificent. A beautiful hardcover. I mean, you could call it, if it was any other kind of book, you could call it a coffee table book. It's so beautiful. But yeah, time is up. They are waving at me. So I just want to say thank you for joining me, and lots of luck with your book. And I'm sure it's going to be a hit.
Thank you so much for having me, and
Okay.
thank you so much for reaching out. Thank you so much. Great to speak to you.
Great to speak to you too.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Sharon Lurie, and you are tuned into Kosher Cravings. This is 101.9 Chai FM, and we have just finished talking to the wonderful Batya Kahan, who's brought out a fantastic recipe book, 368 pages of Pesach recipes. And that is incredible. I mean, we never have to worry about recipes again after you get this book. And she was talking about her Hamisha gefilte fish loaves. And I thought, you know what? Let me bring Hamisha back. Let me bring gefilte fish back. And I promise that I'd give you the recipe. So here we go. So she says 3 pounds of white fish. Okay, so now she uses white fish, carp, and pike. Okay, I don't really see those in our fisheries. So we basically use hake, but other people like to use a little bit of king clip in it. Okay, you can use what you want. Okay, but all in all, it is a total of 2 kilos. 2 kilos of fish. Then she says, 1 cup of finely grated Spanish onion. That is our regular onion with a brown skin on, the hard brown skin. 1/2 large carrot, shredded. Grated, man. She uses 10 eggs. I suppose this is what keeps it really light. 2 cups of sugar. So this seems to be quite a sweet one. 4 tablespoons of salt. So that knocks out quite a bit of the sugar, I suppose. 2.5 teaspoons of white pepper. 4 tablespoons of water or soda water. And 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil. And then for her cooking broth, she uses about 12 to 14 cups of water. Depends on how your pot is, of course. 3 large carrots, peeled and halved. 1 Spanish onion, which is our regular onions, halved. 1/2 cup of sugar, and you can adjust it to taste. And 1/4 teaspoon of white pepper. And then all the lovely skin and bones from your fish, which you ask your fishmonger to keep for you. Okay, and then what she does is to prepare the fish, you mix in a large mixing bowl, combine all the eggs. So it was, 10 eggs, the sugar, which is 2 cups of sugar, your 2.5 teaspoons of pepper, your carrot, which was 1/2 large carrot grated, water, how much water was there? 4 tablespoons of soda water, she suggests, and your oil, which was 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil. Okay, and you mix it for 2 minutes on high speed, and I suppose with your K beater. And then the ground fish. Add the ground fish. Okay, so she's obviously mixed her fish together. And you mix it for 10 minutes on medium speed until well incorporated. And then you add fine salt and you mix for another 2 minutes on high speed. Okay, and then she says if you're making the ovals, the round balls, gefilte fish balls, you refrigerate the mixture for at least an hour. But she says even if better, for 24 hours to make them nice and firm. Then you oil your hands and using about 3/4 cup of the mixture per ball, you can form them into elongated ovals or round, as we traditionally know. And that's the story. And then to prepare the broth. Of course, you can make loaves as well, as she mentioned. I think that some of our fisheries do make loaves for us. But you can, I think you can get about 3 loaves out of this. And you just freeze it raw. But let's do the cooking broth first. In a wide pot, in a big pot, you combine the water, which was about 12 to 14 cups, the sugar, which was 1/2 cup, the the onion, halved, carrot slice, and pepper, and bring it all to the boil. Then you reduce it to a gentle simmer, and you carefully lower the frozen ovals, which she has done. She froze them. I thought we could just refrigerate them, but you can freeze them, I suppose, as well. And you put them into the simmering broth. And after 10 minutes, you add the reserved fish skins and bones. Okay, that's interesting. So after 10 minutes, we add the bones. And you cover, reduce the heat to low, and simmer gently for 1 hour and 45 minutes, turning and basting them with the liquid every 20 to 30 minutes. And then you just take them out with a slotted spoon, and there are your beautiful gefilte fish balls. Now, if you make them into loaves, okay, you stick them into the oven and roast them, or you can take the raw gefilte fish balls, as I've done before, the loaf, and I've sliced the loaves and fried them. So that's a nice way of doing things. And then, of course, you put them in into an airtight container, and you pour some of the broth over it, and when it gets cold, it will get that gel, which I know some people don't like, and you keep it in the fridge or in the freezer. And it's as simple as that. So, that's Pesach from Batya's Kitchen. But she has 368 recipes and different ideas for Pesach. And this is your one-stop book, really. She teaches you how to make a roset, how to do maror, how to lay the Seder plate, why we do it, when we do it, what we do it for, all the different salatim, which I'm going to put onto my table this year. There are just so many incredible ideas from her book. So, I think that's me for the end of the show. Thank you for joining me, and I hope I've sorted out Pesach for you. If I haven't, go out and get this book. It's worth it. Or hint to your mother-in-law that you want it. Okay, everybody, see you soon, and thank you for joining me.